So this morning's reading is from Habakkuk 3, verses 1 and 2. If you use the Pew Bible or your own Bible, that would be great. The Pew Bible, if you look to page 763. So Habakkuk chapter 3, starting at verse 1. A prayer of the prophet Habakkuk according to Shigionoth. O Lord, I have heard of your renown, and I stand in awe. O Lord, of your work. In our own time, revive it. In our own time, make it known. In wrath, may you remember mercy.
Well, Habakkuk is a book about traveling through difficult times, and it tracks the journey the soul can make as we go on that journey, on that traveling through difficult times. It tracks some of the landmarks of the soul that you can experience when you're going through great difficulties. And the passage today is very short, just a few verses, but highly significant because it's a point in which Habakkuk begins really to pray and to engage with God in truth. Actually, if you look at the world around us, there's lots of things that would seem to be very troubled times. There's many countries going through great difficulties and much oppression and suffering. I know many of our Iranian brothers and sisters have come to Australia because things are so difficult for them in Iran, but we can also look to countries like Syria, the terrible devastation they've experienced, or Congo, where 5 million have died in civil wars, or the Sudan, where millions have also died and the wars keep going. And we can look back through the 20th century to the Holocaust, to the carnage of the Second World War, or to events like the Ukrainian famine in the 1930s, when the Soviet Union engineered almost a genocidal famine there, which caused about 5 million to die, or Chairman Mao's Great Leap Forward, which caused the deaths of somewhere around 50 million people, the Cultural Revolution, another 5 to 10 million people lost their lives under Chairman Mao's leadership. We can think of many troubled times in the last 100 years or so, and actually our soul can barely comprehend how difficult the world can be and how painful it can be for people, often innocent people, who are in the midst of great calamity. God forbid that in Australia we would find ourselves going through anything like these troubles that have occurred in so many places around the world and are still happening. Well, Habakkuk is in the midst of this conversation with God, and in the context of a huge crisis or a calamity that's going to affect his country. He begins by complaining about the injustice that he can see in the world around him, that the wicked are getting off scot-free and the poor and the vulnerable have no recourse. He's complaining about the corruption of those in justice and those in leadership. He's complaining about the corruption of the political processes around him. And he's asking God, God, why don't you fix this? Why aren't you sorting this out? Why do you let this happen? And part of God's response is he says that judgment is coming in the form of the Babylonian conquest, which is going to be a terrible outcome. And Habakkuk hears that. He complains again. And he says, I'm listening. I'm watching. I want to hear your answer. And he gets more bad news from God, which is the five woes that we looked at last week. And in the end of that, he's just like, he just responds with silence. He's unable to speak anymore. The last verse of chapter 2 is, the Lord is in his holy temple, let all the earth keep silence before him. So his arguments with God, his wrestling with God, just runs out of steam, and he just stops there. He's asked for justice, but he's been told about a whole bucket load of pain, the judgment of God that's coming down on Judah. And so at this point, he moves into prayer. And we're going to look at his prayer and what that prayer means. But before we do, I'd like to tell you a bit of a story about my father. He was a pastor and evangelist. He led many people to the Lord. I still meet people who knew him or who were helped by his ministry. He was also trained in psychology. He was very interested in counseling and in education as well. And he was particularly involved in equipping people for ministry, training men and women for ministry over many years and helping form them. And you would have thought with my dad that he was a person of strong faith. He'd seen many miracles in his ministry and had a strong belief in the power of God and in prayer. But at the end of his life, he was really quite overwhelmed. He had a complicated set of medical conditions. He had prostate cancer, which was gradually getting worse, and he'd had a heart valve failure, so he had an artificial heart valve, which meant he was on blood thinners, and that complicated his medical treatment. So his condition in the last 10 years or so of his life was quite difficult, and it got worse and worse until when he was in hospital in the last 4 weeks, or 3 weeks or so of his life, he was in a lot of pain, and he became, I think you'd say he was quite depressed. And some of his clergy colleagues would go and they'd try and minister to him and encourage him. I don't know what they said to him. Maybe they said, "Rejoice in the Lord always," or something. I'm not sure what verse they pulled out of the Bible. But he used to get quite annoyed at them for coming to him and like Job's comforters, you know, because he was in a lot of distress. He just really wanted it finished. He wanted it done. And even the bishop went to see him. And I saw the bishop just as he came out of my dad's room, and he was like shocked, you know, shell-shocked. I don't know what to do about your father. He's obviously traveling quite badly. And it was quite distressing to see that he was so upset, because he was such a person of faith. And not everyone at the end of life, when faced with a lot of pain and difficulty, gets quite as ornery as my dad became. But I went to see him, and he looked me in the eye and he said, "It's come to this, Mark." And just about all he could do at that point was to sing over and over again, "Be still and know that I am God. Be still and know that I am God. Be still and know that I am God. Be still and know that I am God." So there he was, lying in his bed of pain, just singing that over and over again. And I felt sad for him that he wasn't able to move beyond that. But there he was. He hadn't lost his faith, but he was kind of, there was something in him that was shut down. He was stuck. He was just stuck. And you know where he was stuck? He was stuck at the end of Habakkuk 2. "But the Lord is in his holy temple. Let all the earth keep silence before him." So he was just stuck there at a point of pain and not being able to move beyond that. He was unable to hang on to the promises of God. He was in a very stuck place. He was still a believer. He still loved God, but he was just overwhelmed by his circumstances. And having gone through that and seen him in that place, maybe all of the doubts and fears and frustrations in his life that hadn't been resolved kind of came back to visit him at that time, I was really struck by how Habakkuk responded when he moved past that point. Because Habakkuk got to that point as well of saying, "Just be still, because the Lord is in his holy temple. Let all the earth be silent before the Lord." And we see the beginning of Habakkuk coming out of that place in chapter 3. We'll hear more of it next week when Pastor Stuart Robinson comes. So at the beginning of chapter 3, Habakkuk is no longer asking why. God has spoken. Habakkuk has heard. He's accepted by this point that God's judgment is coming and it will prevail, that God's justice on the nation can't be stopped. So he has no more questions or complaints. Instead of complaining or trying to argue God down, he chooses to become a worshipper. He's gone through the waiting, he's gone through the listening, he's gone through the asking questions, and now he chooses to worship. He says, "Lord, I've heard of your fame. I stand in awe of your deeds." His prayer is commenced as an act of worship. He could no doubt analyze the situation in Judah. He understood the corruption that was going on. He could see the religious apathy, the empty rituals of people who were just play-acting in the temple, people disbelieving in the power of God or the justice of God. There was religion all around him without truth and grace. He was deeply troubled by this. He had a bone to pick with God about it all, but he was beyond actually complaining about all that. Because God had showed him in a flash of revelation what the future held for the nation, and it really appalled him. The Babylonians were coming to sack Jerusalem and to enslave her people. Bitter punishment was coming, and he realized at this point that it could not be stopped. He couldn't wrestle God around on this issue. And at this point, he begins to pray, to really pray, and not just to complain. Because he senses in the enormity of what is happening that he needs to become a worshipper. He needs to worship the living God. And so he falls to his knees. He's tried interrogating God, standing at his watch, as he calls it in Habakkuk 2. He's told God he's ready to hear what God has to say. But when God does speak and warns of what is to come, the five woes, Habakkuk can only respond, the whole earth is full of the glory of God, and there is just silence in the holy temple of the Lord. And so he just has collapsed at that point, in a sense. But here he begins to find his voice again, but his voice is not one of complaint. His voice says, I have heard of your fame, I stand in awe of your deeds. What is he doing here? His complaint is set aside as he begins to engage with God and to honor and to praise God for who he is. He's accepted that the judgment is coming. He's not arguing with God. He's not trying to accuse God of neglecting justice. Instead, he's acknowledging the nature of God, the holiness of God, his majesty and his power. And so he says, I have heard. What has he heard? What is he remembering at this point in the midst of all this bad news? Well, he's remembering, I think, the God who brought Israel out of Egypt with signs and wonders, the deeds of the Lord. He's remembering the powerful and wonderful things the Lord has done. And his one plea is that the Lord will renew these deeds in this age, that God would be seen to be the God who saves, who does mighty works in this time that is coming. This is his plea. And also, he asked that God would, in the midst of the judgment, remember mercy. In wrath, remember mercy. Have mercy, Lord. You know, often we try and box God up. We try and make him into like our patron saint, to bless all our ways, to justify our bad choices. We sometimes attempt to demean or reduce God as if we're trying to recruit him for our team. God cannot be recruited. And there's a real danger in trying to do that with God. We have a little Jack Russell, and he's quite a lively little chap. And we do our best to train him, but sometimes it seems like he's training us, or at least he'd like to. Instead of us rewarding him for good behavior, he's doing things that will make us produce the things he wants. It's like he's trying to turn the relationship around. He wants to dominate us and be the top dog, even though he's only about 10 inches tall. He's got a bit of a cheek, really. And sometimes we have a bit of a cheek with God, like we want to recruit him to be our servant, really. And we forget about the sovereignty and the majesty of God. We can be quick to blame when things go wrong. We can try and occupy the higher moral ground with God. But what's needed is for us to fall on our knees and to remember the Lord who has done mighty deeds and his character, to confess, have mercy upon me, O Lord, a sinner. And so Habakkuk here is actually, in this prayer, he's really saying the beginning of the Lord's Prayer, your will be done on earth. He's acknowledging who God is and what God is doing. I have heard of your fame. I stand in awe of your deeds. And that's a good response. It's a healthy response at this point. God's voice, and Habakkuk has been hearing the voice of the Lord, God's voice should incite awe. God's love does cast out fear, but the freedom that comes from knowing God's love is when we humble ourselves before him, not when we try and argue him to the ground. It's a terrifying thing to fall into the hands of the living God, as the scriptures say. That is, if we stand opposed to him, if we set ourselves against him. But when we humble ourselves, when we run to God for help, we find a refuge in him. We find a safe place in him. Habakkuk, in this time, he turns to God, acknowledging him as judge, but he's also asking him to be savior as well. And that's why he says, in wrath, remember mercy. Actually, Habakkuk here is remembering the covenant and reminding God of the covenant, because in the covenant it's said that if the nation turns away from the Lord, then the curses of the covenant will come upon them and they'll be sent into exile. But inside that judgment there's a promise that if people repent and turn to the Lord, he will bring them back to the land. They'll be restored. And Habakkuk is, in a way, unpacking that promise that's in the heart of the covenant. Lord, you told me that the Babylonians are coming, that the people will be exiled, the judgment is coming. But he's saying, you remember mercy. Remember your promise that your love would never fail, that even in the midst of judgment, that you would still love and care for your people. And so he's asking God to remember God's own character and God's own promise, God's own ways. He's remembering what God has done. He's calling God to be who God really is. And in doing that, he's worshiping the Lord. He's not doing that in pride. He's not doing that kind of telling God off. He's just acknowledging who God is, and he's saying, remember mercy in the midst of all what you've been speaking about. Out of that crucible of submission to God comes life and healing, and Habakkuk is claiming that in this prayer, this very humble and simple prayer. He's adopting the posture which is spoken about in Psalm 51, a broken and contrite heart, God, you will not despise. And he's calling out from that position, Lord, have mercy on us, have mercy on your people. He's doing this in awe, humility, and reverence, the pathway to true deliverance from the troubles to come from the nation comes from that very spirit with which he begins to pray. And we'll hear more next week about the outcome of that prayer and how the Lord leads him in the rest of this third chapter. And I want to really encourage you that if you face overwhelming difficulties, problems that are very deep and that cause you to go on a faith journey that can be quite painful, I want to encourage you to keep moving on that journey and not to get stuck at one point. Sometimes the moment difficulties come, people just bail out. They hit the snake in the snakes and ladder game and they fall right out because they just nothing had prepared them for the idea that things wouldn't always be right. And when something goes wrong, they just give up altogether. Others go through the stage of arguing with God, but God, you shouldn't be letting this happening. Why has this happened to me? And then might get stuck like my dad at the be silent before the Lord. He just ran out of words. It was just too much for him, what he was going through. But he needed to have kept moving. He needed to have remembered what the Lord had done in his life in the past and who God was and what God had done in history. He needed to find a place just to move forward past that point where he was stuck. And I think when you're going through difficulties, I really encourage you in the scriptures to find resources to keep moving towards that place of worship, of acknowledging the sovereignty and the love of God and the faithfulness of God to you. There's actually a lot of scriptures about this, particularly in the New Testament for us. And these letters are, in the New Testament are written to churches who are experiencing suffering and experiencing great difficulties and written by people who also were going through great difficulties as well. So there's a lot of wisdom there. There are promises that we can hold on to. And so when we find ourselves saying to the Lord, Lord, I've heard of your fame, I've heard of your deeds, would you renew them in our day? We can do that by remembering these promises that he's given to us about our situation. I'd like to take you, for example, to Romans 8:28. We know that all things work together for good for those who love God, who are called according to his purpose. For those he foreknew, he also predestined to be conformed to the image of his Son. So he's speaking about God's calling, a calling upon us to glory, really, not just to destruction or to pain. That when we go through suffering or difficulty, that's not the end of the story. That's not the end of the calling that God has put upon us. Sometimes we wonder why we're going through difficult times, but sometimes the answer is that God is helping us grow through that, through difficulty. Hebrews 12:11 says that discipline always seems painful rather than pleasant at the time, but later it yields the peaceful fruit of righteousness to those who've been trained by it. And here the letter to the Hebrews is writing about paying attention to the example of Jesus, how he endured through suffering and through difficulty, and says you should be like him as well, because there's something beyond that. There is more beyond that. And I'd like to also take you to 2 Corinthians chapter 4, verse 17. This is speaking about the fact that we have this treasure of our faith and our relationship with God in clay jars, that there's a brokenness about this life that can't be completely eradicated by any means. And that brokenness, that means that we have a treasure, but it's in the clay pot that itself is not particularly good. And that clay pot will pass away. That is, the shell of this life is not all there is. And Paul says we are afflicted in every way. We're crushed, but we're perplexed, but we're not driven to despair. He said we're afflicted but not crushed. We're persecuted but not forsaken. We're struck down but not destroyed. We're carrying the death of Jesus in us, but that the life would be made known in us. And then he has these beautiful words in verse 17. In 16, we don't lose heart, even though our outer nature is wasting away, our inner nature is being renewed day by day. For this slight momentary affliction is preparing us for an eternal weight of glory beyond all measure. And at that time when we find ourselves silenced and we almost begin to run out of words, it's important to remember these promises and to pray as Habakkuk did, Lord, I have heard of your fame, I know your ways, I remember what you have done. Remember mercy, remember your promises, your glory, your purpose. Remember that overwhelming weight of glory that you have promised to us, and to hold on to that at that time and not to let go of that, to move past just being shocked and overwhelmed by what's happening, and to reach out and hold on to what God has promised, to his character, to his nature, to his love, and to his purpose for you in your life. The fact is, we will experience difficulties, and they do come, but God has given us resources to hold our path through that. And that's what we're here for as a church, to help each other in those times and to keep moving through them. And we'll hear more about the outcome from Habakkuk next week as we continue on this journey. One of the things I really love about the Bible is it's very real. It doesn't pretend that the Christian faith is all sort of flairyfoss and niceness. There are real difficulties that we face in life, and sometimes whole nations face overwhelming tragedy and sorrow. And I think the scriptures have really powerful words for us and strategies for us to make our way through those difficulties. So I want to commend to you today Habakkuk's humble prayer. When he reaches the end of himself and he understands what God is doing, he says, Lord, I've heard of your fame. I stand in awe of your deeds, Lord. Repeat them in our day. In our time, make them known. In wrath, remember mercy. Let me pray.